Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
With that time yours.
The Browns, huh? It's really going to be the Browns? Chiefs-Browns? Sunday at 2 p.m. Central? The Browns! Yeah, all right. Yeah, sure, why not? Welcome to Time's Ours. Super wildcard weekend is over. And, guys, the Chiefs are going to play the Browns to go to the AFC Championship game. That's what they got to do next weekend. 2.05 p.m. Central kickoff. They beat the Browns. They go to the AFC Championship game again. That doesn't sound so bad. How do you guys feel?
We did discuss this as a possible option because we were contractually obligated to discuss all the options. They should have called it after the first quarter, but stranger things have happened, but it didn't happen. I don't know, guys. The Cleveland Browns, just a fairy tale story that I didn't see coming. We're going to obviously discuss this at great length, but just on the immediate appearance, I was surprised in a way that I wasn't prepared for, given the fact that they led wire to wire. And Seth, I mean, just say the sentence that Josh just said out loud. If you beat the Cleveland Browns, you go to the AFC Championship game.
I'll be honest. Did you guys expect Pittsburgh to win?
I am not where Nate is. Nate seems like this game really shook him to his core. I thought that the Browns were probably going to lose by about the same margin they beat Mason Rudolph by, which was minimal because I don't think either of those teams are terrifying. But I thought it was on the table. I'm worried about Nate. I feel like Nate's mind has been broken by this. I feel like he's been shattered.
the internet is forever. You can go look this up on a lovely website called Twitter. I had put out the scenario. It appeared as of mid-afternoon on Sunday that it was going to be Chiefs-Ravens, unless, was the big word in the tweet, unless the Browns pull off an upset. It is, it's very hard for a team to win a divisional game week 17 and in the wild card round. You just anticipated, I think, that the Steelers, even though they're home and in a pandemic season, that they did rest some starters in week 17, most notably Ben Roethlisberger. The Browns had really never been there. Guys, do we need to acknowledge that the Browns didn't have their coach?
Yeah, or like, practice all week.
They didn't practice all week?
Well, coaches in practice are overrated.
They practiced once. They didn't have their coach. A couple key players in the secondary, which we'll get to later, didn't play in the game because of the COVID situation over there. It appeared to be dire by kickoff, and then the Steelers just didn't take them with the level of respect necessary for the playoffs. So you're telling me a Hall of Fame quarterback and arguably a Hall of Fame coach came out of a home playoff game not prepared, less than the team that didn't practice all week except for one day and didn't have their head coach. And their coaching staff had to drive to the game because, you know, isolation and trying to protect the players that could play. It is truly remarkable. All credit goes to the Cleveland Browns, but all the blame goes to the Pittsburgh Steelers for that just horrific first quarter performance.
We got an opportunity, and maybe this is something I'll write on this week, to, you know, I was desperately trying to pull back the curtain right away. I was desperately trying to think, what am I going to write about this week? Obviously, I'll take a look at, you know, the matchups, you know, maybe position group and, you know, what the Browns do well versus what the Chiefs do well. But, you know, other than that, it's like, well, the Chiefs haven't played a meaningful game in weeks. Like, there's not, like, new film to break down for Kansas City. And the way the Steelers lost made me think, obviously, it's impossible to not go back to the divisional round last year for the Chiefs and them falling down 24-0. And really, all it took for that lead to not feel insurmountable, at least to me, the moment Mecole Hardman had a great kick return and gave the Chiefs good field position, I was like, oh, okay, phew. Even though they were still down 24-0. And then, you know, three plays later, they had scored. And I was like, oh, okay, it's going to be fine. You could see the difference between the Chiefs and a team like the Steelers, for whom a 28-point lead seemed utterly insurmountable. Like, not even close. Now, to be fair, they started to come back from that. And then proceeded to just, you know, hand it away. Here's another thing we could talk about, because this applies to a couple different games. For all the talk about fourth down.
Yes.
And when to go for it. And the fact that a lot of people are sick of hearing about that.
Preach it, dog. You know,
because it's like every time someone punts, you know, you can predict what Twitter's going to do. And that's annoying for some people. It's annoying for me sometimes. But there's a reason why. And that's because you see unbelievably stupid decisions being made in games that really matter. The Colts and the Steelers both deserved to lose. And this is something I would pretty rarely say, I think. Based on one decision alone, each made. When you punt, like, it was just, it was crazy. So, you know, you got the Colts game. I don't remember what yard line they were on. You know, it was like fourth and one. They're losing by 10. I'm going to get the situation completely wrong. But I remember seeing, you know, you've got like the surrender index Twitter account.
I was just pulling that up, actually, to try to
get it. And it was just like, you know, this was one of the most cowardly, it was like the most cowardly punt of the year. In terms of like cost benefit, because there wasn't a ton of time left. They were losing. It was like a yard or 2 yards. And they punted and they barely gave themselves any extra field position. And it was like considered like one of the worst. It was the worst this year. And then like the worst, one of the worst in like 10 years. And yet that might not have even been the worst one this weekend, because the Steelers, what was it? Fourth and two on the Browns 40?
46, I believe. It was near midfield. And you're down 12, I believe.
Yeah, they're down 12. It made no sense. I actually have to pull up the game situation to remember just how just utterly incomprehensible this was, because
they punted on fourth and one from the 46. They took a delay of game, down 35-23, and with basically 15 minutes left in the game. And that was a 94th percentile of cowardly punts in 2020 season. But that Titans one was literally like, basically this Twitter account, the surrender index, was basically like, yeah, this is as bad as
the Titans. Yes.
Yeah, it was the Titans one, not the Colts.
No, nope, I'm an idiot.
The Titans one set the real pace there, but the Steelers had a couple of humdingers.
But it's interesting because you said they took a false start or took a delay game, the Steelers did.
Yeah.
Here's the funny thing is, They benefited in terms of, you know, how that would rate as a cowardly punt by taking that delay of game, because, you know, backed them up a little bit.
They took that into account, I think.
Did they got
like a pre and post. Yeah,
that is the most insane thing to me.
It's crazy.
When you are close enough to the end zone, you're like, man, we better back up a little. So, and it still didn't matter. They end up gaining like 20, 25 yards of field position that the Browns gained back within two plays, three plays. It's ridiculous. That's a reason. That's something that
is
worth discussing.
Seth. And my counter argument, I mean, momentum.
And this is where, see, and this is, I don't even want to get into that conversation, because honestly, it's stupid to think that confidence and a form of momentum doesn't exist. And
that's what Mike Tomlin said after the game, is that he wanted to keep momentum, which is why they punted the football away.
Right, and that's exactly it. Even if you believe that confidence, momentum, those are things that matter, how does punting help?
Momentum. Trust in my defense.
Yeah, I'm just going to say, yeah.
Don't blink.
If you just repeat the same word.
Splash.
Splash. Ah! Popcorn.
And
we don't blink, but we punt.
That happened fast for Mike Tomlin. Like this time last year, like, man, that guy, that we never gave that dude enough credit. And this year, listen, we're all just going splash. Well, he's eliminated from the playoffs.
He is, Mike Tomlin is clearly an awesome leader of men, manager of people.
Yes.
But in terms of in-game decision-making, he is, you know, Andy Reid drives fans crazy sometimes, but Andy Reid never punts on either of those two ones. I don't even think, and if he tried, I think Mahomes would in a loving way, incapacitate him and get out there anyway. I don't know if Mahomes keeps a little chloroform in his back pocket for just such an emergency.
There you go, Danielle. There's the Twitter video. Glad to make that one easy for you this early in the game. Seth accuses Patrick Mahomes of carrying chloroform in his pocket at all times.
Only for the purposes of bad fourth down judgment calls.
Only for the purposes of using on his own coach. Very cool, Seth. Very
cool. Only for purposes of good. That's what I've decided. Like Batman.
So we have to acknowledge, fellas, that Mike Tomlin, arguably a Hall of Fame coach, Mike Vrabel, a known quality coach.
Who's been willing to put some things on the line for a Super Bowl. He's on the record.
Yes. Frank White, who has won a Super Bowl, not as a head coach, but as an offensive coordinator. Pete Carroll, who's won a Super Bowl. All these coaches may just, like, the playoffs are a good reminder that, like, humans are not perfect. And we can overthink things, and sometimes our brains can malfunction in real time. And so it's interesting to know that the Chiefs could sit back, see how the six games, which by the way, six games, that was glorious. But you could sit back for six games and kind of see how the contenders are, you know, not only are they measuring themselves for the future, but how they're handling a situation that could be eerily similar to what you may encounter on your journey. And to know that, like, we should have faith in all of these coaches to pretty good degrees, all making mistakes, it is somewhat mind-boggling because this information has been out there for decades. It's not hard. But we need to also realize that in these pressurized moments, even the coaches who have been really successful at this can still make blunders. And if you give Andy Reid and the Chiefs an even greater coaching advantage, that does not bode well for the rest of the AFC, perhaps the rest of the NFL. But I wrote an article 2 years ago, guys, that we all loved, which was basically because of the 2018 Chiefs defense, don't you dare punt. Don't think about punting. Mm-hmm. Punting ain't even a real thing you can do in playoff games.
The Chiefs have two punters again. They should have zero. They should recut Dustin Colquitt and Tommy Townsend.
Hey, so, you shut your mouth.
Quiet, chloroform boy. I've got a take. You've got the take that Patrick Mahomes wants to chloroform Andy Reid, and I think the Chiefs should cut all their kickers.
So, like,
punters,
punting,
all of them. Everybody needs their all leg. Of them. Buckers out of here too.
Like, once you cross
over two,
yes. Once you cross the 40-yard line, punting needs to be the least of your options in
absolutely
certain, in certain situations.
It's and a break glass in case of emergency. It's oh man, we got a penalty, and you know we were on the 20-yard line. Now it's 4th and 20, and we're at the 40. And one could make an argument that you've got the risk of incomplete passes and that kind of stuff. I get all that, But it's a break glass in case of emergency. And I just, so I kind of wanted to, it's funny because on this show, I've tended to take a counter position to the overreach of analytics.
Yeah, I'm going to see if I get a chance on this topic, if you kind of just throw it to me, I'm going to just sit in silence and see how you feel.
And the reason for that is probably because of, you know, the way in which it's been presented by someone here, but I'm not going to say sure. who.
No, it's the blow the brains out of the messenger. That's what they say. That's the famous saying.
And so it all depends on how the messenger presents is what I think. And sure. So I tend to, like, you know, occasionally, because it is important to take, you know, context into account, individual plays, you know, sometimes with your matchup, it's bad. So you don't do this, you don't do that, blah, blah, blah. Those things are all true. At the end of the day, though, what we're seeing is decisions that don't make sense in the individual situation either. And that's where, and that's why, so I'm trying to, for people that are tired of the, that punt didn't make sense conversation. I get that, honestly. People who are tired of the, they should have gone for two here. I get that. I really do. Because in some situations, you know, you're kind of ending up in a, well, you know, if you take into account all the information over the NFL over the last 20 years, you would have been 56% more likely to win versus 51% more likely. In that context, I think it's relatively meaningless. But the problem is it keeps getting brought up, and it should, because you see decisions that make so little sense in the moment just because that's the way that it's always been done. You know, like, Josh, you say, you know, trust the defense, or maybe Nate, you said that as a joke, but that's genuinely be considered a correct way of thinking about those situations for years rather than, man, it's the fourth quarter. We might not have another possession to get within one score. You know, because 9 minutes is not all the time in the world.
It's not.
And that's what I get, trusting your defense. But also, if you want to talk about individual matchups, what specifically had Pittsburgh's defense? Like, I kind of, like, with the Titans, want to make an argument. Oh, you know, we've mostly shut them down all day. I guess. Even then, that punt was really bad.
That punt was chaotic.
Idiotic.
Because you were already you're already on the plus side of the field.
Yeah. You've got Mitch Schwartz out here going, what are they doing?
Like, yeah. Whenever I saw him tweet about it, I knew it was going to become a full thing.
Yeah.
I try not to, like, assume anymore whenever Twitter's going to hate a decision or not, because it just feels like, I don't know. I predict that with like a 40% accuracy. Whenever I saw Mitchell Schwartz be like, oh, wait, they're punting there? I was like, oh, yeah, here we go, everybody. Everyone's right. Going to hate this one. This is going to be great.
And so it's a good opportunity to think about, you know, as Nate kind of alluded to, that you really do end up, I think Chiefs fans take for granted because, and we've talked about this before, when you are watching one team over and over and over, it's really easy to start focusing on their flaws. And one of the things that Chiefs fans sometimes talk about, well, Andy Reid's a little too conservative. He runs more than he should on second down. So when you compare him to other teams, he's very ahead of the curve. Now, I want him to keep, you know, pushing the boundaries and keep going, you know, to where he's never running on second and 10, unless it's like, wow, there's two defensive linemen and no linebackers. Okay, fine. You know, take the easy 6 or 7 yards. Fine. But, like, you know, I want to see him go for it more often than he does. But compared to what you see across the NFL, Andy Reid is actually a pretty aggressive coach. And I'm grateful for that because you see, and again, the Titans probably would have lost anyway, I think. I don't think they're as good a team as Baltimore. I think the Steelers would have lost anyway. I think the Steelers really showed who they were in the last, you know, 6 weeks of the season. But, man, talk about making it as hard as possible on yourself to succeed. Yeah. And that's just one of my takeaways. That, and I got to tell you, I know people don't like change. I understand teams like the Bears getting into the playoffs is a little annoying. Did you guys hate having three games to watch?
No, it's great. I mean, no. I got a little bit, I don't want to say I got burnt out, but there were a couple of times I was like, oof, we are 2/6 of the way through this weekend, you know, at the midway point on Saturday. But it was still wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, you have to be selective in knowing which games you can take a nap, which games you could run to the grocery store, which games you cannot, which games have no impact on your life. Saints Bears!
Well, here's the thing, Nate. Here's the thing. That was going to be my nap game yesterday. You know, I was maybe I'll catch the first half, see where we're at, wake up in time for the end of the fourth. Here's the issue. That game was the most must-watch television because at least one-third of this podcast right now watched an entire football game on Nickelodeon yesterday, and it was weird but good.
I was curious. Josh, I was counting on you to watch the Nickelodeon version of that game.
I watched the whole thing. I did not hear Tony Romo's voice yesterday.
The MVP killed me. When that started circulating,
Mitch
that was
Trubisky
like,
won the MVP. They talked to Cam Jordan after the game because he was third place in the voting because the top two were Bears.
It was a great weekend. It was a lot of fun just sitting watching football. So I guess I understand we don't want to dilute it, but I'm here for more football.
And we called it. We called it, right? I was sitting joyfully. Phillip Rivers, go get us a field goal, Doc.
Right.
Like, just go out there and get it. And they didn't even get an attempt off.
Hey, all of your players are going to forget how to play football for the last 90 seconds of this game. Could you get us there anyway, please, Phil? The fact that his career could end on a Hail Mary that fluttered a little short and didn't really have a real chance. Mm-hmm. The fact that that could be the end of his career as opposed to one of his terrible weapons fumbling the ball to end the playoff run, that feels more right. Like, I feel like Rivers could retire off that and it would make sense.
Yeah. I just want to take about 30 seconds here and pat myself on the back. We all knew that.
Only Colts, 30 seconds this week?
We all knew that the man. You know, Nate, have you noticed that Josh is asserting something in the morning? There's a word for it.
I'm just ashamed of how late that one came out for me.
I hear you, but I was thinking more of the lines of Josh on this one. I am not your ally here.
I seem to recall a couple of people on this podcast who thought that the Bills were going to smash the Colts, and I pointed out correctly that it is Phil Rivers' destiny to be down by a field goal in a game that everyone knows they're not going to actually win, but they're going to get to like midfield and make you think they're going to win. Also, just on another coaching note, remember when Andy Reid's clock management was a crippling weakness?
Yes.
That last drive by the Colts, we got to see a bunch of like, really in the NFL, a lot of things are self-inflicted. And when there's 2 minutes left and you're huddling,
and you don't get a field goal attempt off.
You don't even get a field goal attempt off. And you're checking down. Like, you want to see the difference. We talked about this a lot this year. The difference with Patrick Mahomes when his team is trailing or on third downs. You know one thing he doesn't do? Check down to 1 yard. And we saw this in the Steelers game, too. Check down to, like, a one-yard throw in the middle of the field when there's 2 minutes left and you're out of timeouts.
With no timeouts.
You are literally better off chucking the ball at the running back's feet there and just and saving yourself the 15 seconds. Because that 1 yard is meaningless at that point.
Can I also remind, you know, can I remind the fans that Josh Allen in the fourth quarter showed up? It was great.
that
I'm sure Brian Dable was in his head, was in the helmet, like, all right, dog, we're somehow gonna continue to pass the ball, even though the Colts have literally no timeouts. You can't take a sack. You definitely can't take a sack and fumble the ball. Like, what are you doing? The Bills kind of should have lost that game, or like their consequences should at least have been going to overtime. But it was fun to see Josh Allen play good football for three quarters and then look up and be like, fourth quarter in a wild card game, my time to shine.
The fourth quarter, man, they should have lost that game. That's a fun. Oh, and also I did tweet something really bitter after the game.
Isn't it weird? Ooh, let's talk about that. How are you?
How are you?
Yeah, how are you What triggered you there,
Seth? Well, I got a little annoyed watching the post-game discussion on the Bills. And I wasn't going to say anything because it was a dumb narrative in the first place. So the Bills win by 3. And really, you know, the Colts had to score to get it within 3. The game wasn't quite as close as win by 3. Although, I mean, really, they got within, what, 15, 20 yards of a game-tying field goal?
Right. Sounds somewhat familiar.
Yeah, it does sound somewhat familiar. Although, none of the games other than the Falcons game were really that close for the Chiefs. And what annoyed me is as I'm listening to the post-game commentary, I'm hearing them say things. You know, the Bills had been dominating teams down the stretch. But, you know, it's games like this, you really showed that you've learned how to win. You've really learned how to close. And, like, all these compliments. And I thought to myself, gee, I feel like I heard a lot about close games heading into this week. And it wasn't this. This is not what I heard heading into the week. And it was a very frustrating thing for me. And so I tweeted something passive aggressive, which I know is shocking. But it was just, it's just interesting to me how narratives work. Which, by the way, Josh, I think you've been scrolling through Twitter. We really need to talk about narratives. I saw your.
Oh, yeah. We can come to this. The one that's happening for this week, you mean?
Yeah. The one that's happening for this week.
Absolutely.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure because that's unbelievable.
It's happening. Yeah.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Can I give you something on the narratives real quick? Can I give you something that I realized mid games yesterday that I was genuinely a little bit surprised to realize quite this way? I told you that I literally watched the entire Bears Saints game on Nickelodeon. I did not watch the CBS broadcast for even one moment of it. And I didn't miss it. I didn't miss the standard NFL broadcast element.
I agree. You know, the four letter company had a what do they call these things?
The megacast.
With our good friends Mita Kimes, Darryl Orlovsky, Mark Spears.
They're not my friends. I wish they were my friends, but I'm not gonna try to take it was, that credit.
It was a great product. You know how much I love Lewis Riddick, but I was like, I gotta let you go at halftime, Lewis. I'll come back afterwards.
You're going to be an NFL GM eventually, but they're having some good talks over here about like why that punt was done.
Some analytics.
I saw lots of great tweets about the ESPN Plus megacast. Yes. I checked out the other ones briefly, and what I just thought was so interesting was that, and you know our good friends, really TimeZar's honorary co-host at this point, Lewis Riddick. No shade, but. There was like the film room group, and then there's that ESPN Plus group that is like going a level deeper. The film room also obviously going a level deeper in a totally different way, right? Maybe not totally different sphere, but in a different way. And then there was the Nickelodeon version, and I was watching that one with girlfriend Renee, who at the beginning, as they're explaining all of the points and whatnot with slime graphics. At one point, Renee took out a headphone and said, "Oh wait, hold on. I need this actually. I need to see whatever sort of rudimentary baseline they're laying down here." That was actually probably useful for some people. And then the rest of the game, it was just Ian Eagle's son Noah, who looks like Ian Eagle crossed with the guy from Schitt's Creek, which you can say on the podcast, Seth. There's a C in there. Dan Levy. He looked like Dan Levy crossed with Ian Eagle to create Noah Eagle. It's baffling. But they just sort of were like having fun rooting for the slime cannons. So hopefully someone would score. Mitch Trubisky was winning awards. It was just a fun kind of like laid back atmosphere behind it that wasn't, it was refreshing because I didn't need like the crappy instant analysis that doesn't actually really come from much of anything that you'll find down the dial on a on an average Sunday eventually. I don't think any of the broadcasts this weekend were like terribly rudimentary, but like there were, you know, people were tweeting about this that during the Titans game, the main broadcast was not, did not even mention the Titans punt that we just talked about. And that the ESPN Plus one was like losing its mind.
Losing its, like, like Mina Kimes me, like, but I don't understand. And then, and then Marcus Spears made a very good point in the idea of like, well, what does that feel like as an actual player on defense? Oh, I got to go back out there because we punted for 25 yards. Y'all ain't gonna try a score? Yeah. I thought we was down, coach.
I thought we were losing.
Like they brought a lot of great, like in the immediate moment, like how everyone is probably thinking in the situation, and then all the negative effects of it. It was really impressive.
It would have still been the ESPN crew when they had a broadcast on Freeform, which is the channel that used to be ABC Family. Basically, they just play Harry Potter at Christmas. That channel always has a Harry Potter movie on it, essentially, is how I've grown to know it. They had one that I honestly did not think was fully working, but where it was supposed to be a kind of like a little more live stream format, and I feel like I tweeted at the time that it was still kind of how do you do, fellow kids? Like they weren't quite there in a way that I think the Nickelodeon one paid off on more. But it was just remarkable to me how little I missed just sort of like the normal broadcasting cliches. In some instances, like with the ESPN megacasts, giving you some more like information rich broadcasts. And with the Nickelodeon, it was like, no, we're just gonna strip some of this back and you're gonna have a better time because you don't have to tweet about whatever Phil Simms said about punting. You know, like that, I was very interested to kind of like unpack how okay I was with the whole like tradition of that being pretty busted down for better, more interesting formats. It's tangential, but I thought it was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people that are, I mean, people in our situation that have watched a lot of broadcasts, there's a certain cadence that if you've watched one football game, you've heard it all. Mm-hmm. In a lot of the color commentary is pretty similar, especially. And play-by-play is done with varying levels of ability. A lot of the play-by-play guys, I think, are generally quite good at it. That's a really hard thing to do.
And, it is.
Mm-hmm. The color commentary, I think, is where you find the biggest variance, except with the exception of if Kevin Harlan's calling the game, then there is a high variance above literally everyone else in play-by-play. I could listen to Kevin Harlan like narrate my life and it would be the greatest thing ever. But it really is the color commentary. And I think because so much of what you hear in every game, because really the same things happen in a lot of football games, you know, and you know, the same situations present themselves in kind of different ways. And the way it gets talked about, it's very easy to just fall into a pattern. And so one thing I appreciate about, you know, the megacast or, you know, the Nickelodeon thing, even I like the slime zone. I thought that was fun.
It was fun. I was legitimately the second touchdown and I pumped my fist in the air. It was slime time, baby. Let's go.
Yeah. And I got to tell you, the NFL, for all the things they do that mystify me at times, that's not a stupid thing that they're doing. Mm-mm. And not a stupid thing at all. Although they're going to create a bunch of poor Bears fans. Like, that seemed mean. Although maybe not after how that game went. But it really is good, I think, to have alternatives that are maybe like the way one of you described it as like kind of information rich. Mm-hmm. And to where you can kind of hear some of the things that we've learned about football over the last decade.
Yeah.
And I think you can do both. And that's where it kind of feels like you're always, you know, trying to choose. It's kind of like similar to like, you know, how do we evaluate a team through film or through analytics? The answer is yes. And it's good to see a broadcast attempt to do that. And I think overall, people underestimate how much the way people talk about football is dictated by the way football games are called.
Yeah.
And I think seeing a little more variety in that would be, that's why like Aqib Talib, when he's calling games,
yeah,
you know, people talk about whether, you know, he's polished, this sort of thing, that sort of thing. You want to talk about like not the direction of analytics, but like the direction of film. Mm-hmm. And more like player experience, and like he's willing to just say it.
And you have to remember too, he's also the opposite of Tony Romo. So as much as I love Tony Romo from mm-hmm. a pre-snap standpoint, I love Aqib Talib from a post-snap standpoint about where coverages are rolling and what's the proper responsibilities and how are they playing down and distance. Like all these things are fascinating. But like you mentioned, Seth, it's nice to have a variety to show fans, observers, just the idea of like, well, yes, the quarterback can obviously see things. He can obviously dictate on offense, but a lot of what the defense does pre and post snap is wildly fascinating, no matter what the situation is.
Right. And these are things that can help people learn more about the game. I am a firm believer in the more someone learns about football, the more they love it. I really believe that. I think some people enjoy the game on a more surfacey level, but they kind of more like talk about like the Madden GM type of stuff, mm-hmm. which is why they're always angry when talking about football because, well, I would have done this. I would have done this. But the more you learn about football and the more you see, I really do think it's a beautiful sport. I think it's so cool how everything is interconnected and all the options that stem from every play. And I think you see that with more variety, like what you guys are talking about. And so I don't know. I just, it was a cool thing to see them diving in and maybe pushing the boundaries a little bit on what we thought a game called could look like. And I think in the end, it'll make people smarter fans mm-hmm. and fans who enjoy the game more.
Yeah. Let's go ahead then and talk about, I think there are a couple of things still. I do want to talk about the Browns. Obviously I think what I'll say is if we can leave ourselves 5 minutes at the end of the show for dessert, we can have a little Houston Texans talk. Because I don't think we've had a chance to fully dig into some of the places that's gone, and Bill O'Brien's not there anymore, but they're still the Texans.
Yep.
And I'm gonna just leave a little bit of that at the end as like a treat of how these last several days have gone for them. Because I think the last show we did was the day that story ended up breaking. Mm-hmm. Memory serves. So that's, I'm just telling you guys, if we leave ourselves a little space, That's the dessert we'll allow ourselves if we're good. But let's talk about the Browns being the actual matchup. I was rooting for this. I mean, I mentioned last week, I thought Chiefs Browns would have sort of a weird, fun kind of matchup energy to it, especially after the Ravens won. I don't know why I was rooting for the Ravens, just because I didn't want to talk about Derrick Henry for another week. That was my only reason. But once the Ravens won, I know we talked about many times over, you know, the Chiefs kind of have a narrative building against the Ravens that is fun from the Chiefs' perspective, but I kind of like a little weird, little fresh matchup. The Chiefs and Browns have never played in the playoffs, which is kind of incredible considering that they're both old franchises that have been around forever that just didn't happen to be very good for a large portion of forever. I'm kind of down for this. I'm down for a little Baker versus Mahomes. I think this will be exciting, Nate.
It should be very exciting. I think we have to acknowledge that Kareem Hunt will play a pivotal role in who wins and who loses. Even maybe more so than Derrick Henry, Josh, just because he's such a talented receiver out of the backfield. Mm-hmm. He knows the Chiefs offense. I'm sure some information will be relayed to Kevin Stefanski. Will he be back? Do we know?
He's supposed to be back.
He's supposed to be back. But yeah. Hey, you know, get safe, get healthy to everybody employed by the Cleveland Browns. That's what we want more than anything. Man, this should be fun. We didn't really see a traditional shootout over the wild card weekend. Could this game be a shootout? I'm kind of intrigued with what Cleveland did. If you really break it down, guys, I just there's a reason the Chiefs were they favored by 8 on the opening line, and then that got pushed to 10 last night from what I saw.
I saw 9.5 was the first thing that I saw, and I was really surprised that it was that high, honestly.
So I have a couple of thoughts as to why it may be that high, beyond just Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid and, like, going into Arrowhead Stadium. But, it should be a fun matchup because, like you said, we've never seen it before. The Browns have changed a lot from the last time these two teams played in the 2018 season where Mahomes was throwing for, you know, 50 touchdown passes. And, you know, Kareem Hunt was on the Chiefs roster when that game occurred. Obviously, a lot has happened since then. I get the sense that schematically, as weird as it sounds, the Browns had honestly became a like the Steelers had become a better matchup for the Browns the more the season went further along. And that rarely happens, particularly in the division, because the two teams should know each other so well that, like, it's hard to exploit all of their issues while not, you know, lending yourself to be exploited as well. I don't know, you know, what you saw out of it, Seth, but I think the Chiefs, like, so much of this game comes down to just, are the Chiefs healthy? And we can't forget that. Like, Wednesday's and Thursday's practice this week will be critical in regards to Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Tyreek Hill, Sammy Watkins, Mike Rimmers, will Mitchell Schwartz be on the practice field? What is going to happen with Willie Gay in terms of his injury that we saw in the regular season finale? I think this week is more about the Chiefs than anything the Browns can do, if that makes sense.
And that's generally going to be true in almost every game the Chiefs play, unless it's against a team that stacks up pretty well against them talent-wise, which isn't to say the Browns aren't talented, but there's a reason what they're doing right now is considered kind of a surprise. I think it's going to be an interesting thing for a few reasons. One being, I think we're going to hear a lot of conversation this week about how the Browns are built to keep the ball away from the Chiefs and
yummy. Run it down the throat.
Now, here's one thing I would say.
Let's have a big bowl of that narrative. That's exciting.
Now, if there was a team that's built to run the ball 55 times, it's the Browns. And they can shorten the game if they really commit to it, but they got to play good defense. And just something worth noting, and we'll kind of see how it plays out. The Browns, by Football Outsiders efficiency ratings, are one of the worst defenses in the league against the pass. And the problem is the Steelers, they couldn't really do anything about that because the Steelers aren't that good at offense, like, in general. Like, this is the team that made Cincinnati's defense everyone go, whoa, man, look at Cincinnati running around there. And so I think Cleveland's best shot is to win a shootout of some form. And I'm just not sure they got the horses to do it. And so it's just going to depend a lot more, like you said, Nate, on who's healthy and what Chiefs team shows up. We've been talking about it all year. You know, Travis Kelce gave an interview where he kind of talked about one of the hardest things this year was waiting for the playoffs, basically. Like, you almost want to get it over with. And I think you've maybe seen some of that from the Chiefs this year where they just, man, they're ready. They're ready for, like, the real season to start. We all knew they were making the playoffs this year, barring, like, a catastrophic slew of injuries.
Right.
And honestly, you could have talked me into Mahomes could have gotten hurt week one, and I still think this team makes the playoffs with Chad Henne. I think there's that much talent, and it's well coached enough. It probably wouldn't have contended for a Super Bowl, but that's, you know, and by probably, I mean wouldn't have. But so this is what they've been waiting for. And so then the question is that next gear that they're supposed to have that has shown up in spots this year, is this going to show up for more than a quarter per game? Because that's been the frustration, right? Like, the close game narrative, all that, I don't care that much about that. But I do care about the fact that they generally haven't, they've kind of just, you know, they'll just go off for about a quarter and that's enough. And we talked about that all year. It would be nice to see it for like a half, perhaps, or three quarters. And I think if the Browns see that for a half or three quarters, I just don't think they have enough.
If they see it for a quarter, Seth, I'm not sure how they react. Now, I'm being honest, just because, mm-hmm. you know, what the Miami Dolphins experienced against the Chiefs, and again, in that like 10 to 15 minute period, like you could see it visibly. The idea of like, oh, they just went up another level and we was playing hard from the jump. Mm-hmm. So now what? Like, has Cleveland played anybody as talented as the Chiefs are this season?
No.
No, my first thought was, let me go look at their schedule. And the second thought was, well, it doesn't matter because they haven't played the Chiefs. Like, because that's the actual answer. Right.
I mean, right. I believe so.
Well, and that's, you guys are absolutely, I mean, there's a reason the Chiefs are the runaway favorite to win the Super Bowl. And if you look, I mean, the best teams they played this year.
They lost to the Ravens twice.
And they had a really competitive game against them in December. Got mm-hmm. blown the crap out in September. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got the Ravens, the Titans. They beat the Titans in a shootout.
I mean, this team lost to the Jets 2 weeks ago. Like, I don't know how complicated we got to make this. Like, they've had some ups and downs.
Well, they're a playoff team.
COVID's kind of been a subplot all year.
The Jets had Adam Gase, and then the Jets roster. So I don't know. I feel like it was a pretty evenly matched.
True, and Kevin Stefanski coached in that game. I mean, mm-hmm. just a wild season if you're the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, it's been a wild season for them. I think there's, you know, matchup wise, some of the things they do well, I think maybe they could give the Chiefs problems, because if you can run the ball at like 8 yards a pop, that's a good way to beat the Chiefs. Because you're getting 8 yards a pop. It doesn't really have anything to do with whether you're running or passing. Time
of possession. That's right.
Yeah. You're moving the ball well. And the Chiefs' run defense has looked vulnerable at times this year, but not quite so much lately. I just don't see Mayfield playing that well two straight games. I just don't see it. Maybe. Could be wrong. But it just, matchup-wise, the Chiefs are the more talented team. And they really, like, we're looking at it. So they played the Ravens twice, lost to them twice. They played Tennessee well, kind of. Their defense didn't. I look at the Browns' defense, and pretty much every good offense they played put up points on them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's problematic when you're facing the Chiefs. Mm-hmm. And I also think from a human element, I do think that you remember not the 2013 Chiefs, because that was that disaster in Indy, but when the Chiefs finally won a playoff game, they went into Houston, they beat them 30-0.
That is 2015.
That was 2015. And I mean, that was awesome, right? I mean, everyone was really happy and that sort of stuff. But there's a feeling of accomplishment that comes with that. It's like, hey, we did it. And I do think there's a human element to that. I don't know if the Browns really viewed themselves as Super Bowl contenders this year. And I think it's hard to... What they're going to have to do next week is do what the Chiefs have really done all season and deal with the idea of someone's best shot, everything matters, this is such an important game, etc. And I've got to do it again after doing it last week. And I think that took a mental toll on the Chiefs this year. And I'm just curious whether they're going to really be able to, when you take the human element of it, that's going to be a difficult thing for them to do. They have now had, you know, two straight weeks of super emotional, you know, I wouldn't say tough wins, because the Steelers, man, they crapped the bed. That was tough to watch. And by tough to watch, I mean really funny.
Yeah.
I don't like the Steelers. Lie. I'm still bitter about the Steelers and, you know, they beat the Chiefs with all field goals. I mean, gosh. So I have a hard time seeing them keep up with the Chiefs, because I think what you could see happen here, I think the first quarter is going to be really important for the Browns, but not so much for the Chiefs. Because someone posed the question this way: how much would the Browns have to be leading after the first quarter for you to be comfortable as a Browns fan? It's got to be more than
47.
24.
47. Yeah.
It's got to be more than 24, right? I mean, it just has to be because they've all seen it. You, in a way, if you're going to be leading big after the first quarter and you're the Browns, you almost want it to be, you'd rather it be 21 than 24. You'd rather, like, you don't want any kind of like, oh, that's similar. And whereas for the Chiefs, so it's not that
I
important.
I think you might rather
Chiefs.
It just be like a good like 17, maybe even just like a nice 13 where they don't have to wake up yet.
Or even maybe like 20-7, kind of just a very dissimilar score.
Yeah.
Something like that. And you would want it to not be based off weird things like block punts, et cetera. So for the Chiefs though, I mean, that's demonstrative. The first quarter it matters. Like any game of football, you don't want to waste the first three possessions on either side, but it doesn't matter that much. On the other hand, if the Browns, like let's say just, you know, there's a touchdown, three and out touchdown, and the Chiefs go up 14 zip. Is that it? I mean, this next drive, suddenly, if you're the Browns, it's like, holy crap, we have to score a touchdown. Or this thing is about to get really out of hand.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Can I give a shout out, Josh?
Please.
Shout out real quick, because now we're in playoff mode officially today. Angie Coots, I think is her name, COOTS from Oklahoma. Shout out to her, one of the subscribers and dear listeners of Times Ours who received confetti. She sent us a tweet last night that I thought was fascinating. It kind of plays up to Seth's point. You know, she's Angel Angie underscore Casey. Go give her a follow. But she asked us, you know, did the Browns really play that well, or did the Steelers just kind of have bad luck at the start and they never recovered? And I thought about this last night. And again, thank you, Angie. I feel like the game could not have started better for the Browns last night. Like, they scored a touchdown on the first play. And from that moment on, belief was ingrained. And for a playoff team who had to get through one hurdle, who had never played a game collectively together in the playoffs, where their coach isn't even in the building, let alone the state, them getting positive reinforcement on the first play. And Ben Roethlisberger, shout out to age. He was like, I mean, I know I should go for the ball. I ain't bending over. No, it's a long game, boys. Long game. There's 59 more minutes. I mostly blame James Conner for not getting the fumble recovery.
Yeah, God forbid we blame Ben Roethlisberger for something.
I'm glad you picked up on that, Josh.
Thank you.
Marquise Pouncey. What you doing? So, you give them belief on literally the first snap. Mm-hmm. They can get through the psychological hurdle of having to, you know, beat you because they beat you the week before. And Juju Smith-Schuster, if there's anything that the Chiefs coaching staff should tell their players this week, do not disparage the Browns anymore. It's not cool. Like, it's not cool anymore. So Juju Smith-Schuster, if you're not aware, was like, no, the Browns are the Browns. They'll still stink in the playoffs. And kind of gave a wink on Zoom.
Yeah.
So they had all of the nobody believes in us. They had all of the positive reinforcement. They had all of the, hey, this aging quarterback, he is going to take him a minute to get warmed up because he hadn't played in a couple weeks, which I think is slightly different than having Patrick Mahomes literally in his prime take a few weeks off. There's true differences just beyond the talent. So if the Chiefs are just themselves in the first quarter, the game will be wildly different than what it was against the Steelers just because they scored on the first play. And then the Steelers, like, didn't make adjustments at halftime. Seth, I encourage you to look at what their defense did in the second half. It concerned me for the livelihoods of those fellas and their paychecks. Because I understood what the Browns were doing, and they apparently did not.
the Browns, yeah. you said that very well. I really don't have anything to add to that. It's what happens when it had a similar feeling to it, though it was different in execution, to Chiefs-Ravens in week 3, where you kind of waited to see what the Ravens would do in the second half, you know, to adjust mm-hmm. to a really bad first half. And it's like, oh, nope, they're still just going to keep blitzing. Okay.
You still don't keep covered. You still don't keep covered Landry with a linebacker.
Well, yeah, and this is actually, I remember we talked about a potential Chiefs Steelers.
They ran it like 4 times, and the dude was out there left to dry. He ran the man coverage against Landry.
The Browns.
What are you doing?
Oh my gosh. So, the Browns, we talked about this earlier this year. Okay, I was just waiting.
I'm sorry, Josh, but I had to get that off, Doug. Like that's Landry. That's one of the better route runners in the middle of the field.
It's just
putting a linebacker on it. Like,
it's such a bad idea.
What do you do to your family?
It's similar to the Cowboys. The Cowboys found out early in the season that schematically the Steelers' defense could be stressed by spreading them out. Depending on the personnel you've got in there, the Steelers like to keep heavy personnel. It makes sense because those are their best players. And we talked about that, I just had a really hard time worrying about a Chiefs-Steelers matchup because I just think what they like to do on defense. Imagine you would have had that same thing except it would have been, you know, a linebacker on Watkins or Kelsey or Hill or Hardman. Mm-hmm. It would have been the same result. And so just on a side note, did you guys see anyone on that Steelers team that looks remotely capable of covering Travis Kelce?
Cause I don't know if I've seen that guy this year.
Ask him, look, Denzel Ward, come back, dog.
Unless the Chargers trade somehow a fully healthy Derwin James to them, it's just not happening.
What will prevent Andy Reid from going 4 wide receivers with obviously Kelce as one of them and just motioning out Clyde Edwards-Helaire, if healthy, into 5 wide sets?
I think the answer is that Andy Reid just sort of like forgot to pack his running backs as pass catcher section of his playbook at the beginning of the year. They were moving from like the home offices back to the stadium, and he just left that folder at home, and he hasn't caught up to him yet.
These guys can do something besides run out into the flat.
What? Yeah, it's crazy. It's a big folder. It's just in the basement underneath that antique table that he was working from during the draft.
So if you're Steve Spagnuolo, make Baker Mayfield actually think for like 2 seconds. Just that like that's like goal number one is to, again, and because this is a divisional matchup and you know the team so well, it played into the Browns' hands in a way that I just did not anticipate. So, again, if you're Steve Spagnuolo, do some things that are slightly different. Pre-snap, post-snap motion. Don't put a linebacker out there. Don't put Ben Neiman on that island. Don't do it. And, you know, have Baker Mayfield have to think about where the blitz is coming. And also, their offensive line, a bit shaky because of injuries. Does that play into the hands of Chris Jones, Frank Clark, Alex Okafor? But, yeah, the Browns are going to have to – the Browns are going to have to play an actual playoff game. Whatever the hell that was last night was not a conventional playoff game.
Right. It'll be an interesting game. I know we're going to have more to look at. I'm excited for the matchup stuff. I'm excited to dive into the film to kind of see what the Browns did on defense. It's hard to tell whether or not what they did is going to be similar to what they're going to try to do against the Chiefs, because the offense is... I don't know if you could find offenses more different than Pittsburgh and Kansas City. Mm. Like, it really, it's going to be a very different game.
They
both
stink at short yardage runs. That's one thing they had in common.
There you
That's
go.
True.
Yeah.
True. Found one.
Exactly.
Pretty good weapons.
It's like the Spider-Man meme all over again, yeah. Just on that one very specific situation.
Yeah, it's just like if you had like two alternate versions of the Avengers, but the Spider-Man is the exact same on both of them. That's sort of, they can still learn each other.
But everything else is like the DC versus Avenger. Everything else is completely that's different, right. But they both that's have right. Spider-Man for some reason.
Yeah, that's good. That's better. I also just saw this tweet that was put up on this timeline here. There were 102 pass attempts last night and no sacks. And I'm guessing that's something probably we'll talk more like very Browns matchup specific later. But I bet I'll say this. I bet the Browns don't have zero sacks next week. That concerns me a little bit.
Yeah. No, Myles Garrett scares me.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. He's a freak, and he can really play.
I also bet Patrick Mahomes doesn't turn the ball over five times. So
yeah, that would help. Yeah. I mean, again, five turnovers. That ain't a playoff game. What is this?
That's so many. And one might even say, arguably, it's a bit of an indictment on the Browns that the Steelers managed to climb to a position where that late punt mattered.
Yeah.
Because if a team turns the ball over five times, my God, you really should beat them by like 20. And like not have it come close after all those turnovers. Good Lord, it was bad. But at least we get to be here for the Kareem Hunt revenge game. So
right, okay. So yeah, I was just about to hop over and take the steering wheel and climb back over into the driver's seat and grab onto that real quick. Because we're not gonna have our Texans dessert. I'm sorry, guys, we've gone too long. But I do need to let you have a second on the Kareem Hunt revenge game. I will say to frame this as accurately as possible, Kareem Hunt had the video where he said that next week's personal from the locker room after the game, and then afterwards he talked in the press conference. He was asked about the Chiefs, and it sounded much more of like a cordial, like I've got friends there. They supported me, and I did good stuff for them. Kind of whatever, you know. You can frame that however you want. There is a tweet from a Cleveland sports talk radio host that describes it as Kareem Hunt returning to Kansas City seeking to topple the team that gave up on him. And that tweet's going around a little bit. And Nate, I would just like, in kind of a nice little Cliff's Notes situation, for you to just sort of run back the Kareem Hunt timeline with the Chiefs as best as you remember.
Yeah.
And just kind of let's have a little refresher.
Kareem Hunt made some young decisions that occur at times. He had a house party, as they would say. This is before the 2018 season. It's back in his hometown of Cleveland, essentially. And a young woman was there. He appears to be influenced by alcohol, was what was told to me at the time. And he pushed this woman after an altercation, and then he kicked her. There was video of it in the lobby, or not in the lobby, in the hallway, excuse me. And when this occurred, obviously the police were called out. you know, and it kind of went away quietly. The Chiefs, you know, inquired about it because that's what your employer does. You should try to be honest. Kareem, after several attempts, wasn't honest. Went out, had a pretty good 2018 season. The Chiefs were looking to be a dominant force headed towards the playoffs. TMZ posted a video, again, of him pushing a woman, escaping the protection of his friends, and he kicked her. And the team felt it felt like its only option was to release him. Now, you have to remember at the time, in 2018, the images were not the same, but they were eerily similar to what happened with Ray Rice. And there was a true discussion in the league if Kareem Hunt would ever play football again because of it being on video and because the fact that he lied to his employer. Now, there will always be the discussion as to why the Chiefs cut him. Is it two things or is it more of a percentage of one versus the other? In the Chiefs' own statement, they kind of, and tell me if I'm wrong, Josh, they put it in the hands of he lied to us, not mm-hmm. the action. Some could say that that was a way to help Kareem try to stay in the league if he got through his management issue, his anger management issues, and maybe he handled himself when he was obviously, you know, out with friends. And there was immediate interest by one team in the NFL who was managed by John Dorsey. That was the Cleveland Browns. The Cleveland Browns, in the subsequent offseason, I believe in February, signed him to a one-year deal, and he has been a good football player, which he always was, and he has handled himself accordingly. But the notion that the Chiefs gave up on him is not correct, when in fact, Kareem Hunt put himself in a terrible spot. And then when the video came out, there really were no other options.
I think it's worth noting, you know, one quick IG video, or what was it, Instagram, that he put it on, where he said, you know, next week personal. I always struggle, you know, with context. And he said a bunch of really nice things about the Chiefs in his presser, that, you know, there's a lot of people there that care about him mm-hmm. and that he cares about. It really was a stupid thing to say from an objective standpoint, the idea that it's personal. And I understand, you know, you're in the locker room. I mean, you've been after a big game, everyone's hyped up. You're just kind of, that's honestly, if I were to give any players advice, like, don't put things on the gram right after a win.
You sound so cool.
Yeah, I know. And don't try to be down with the hip hop. Okay, now I'm not.
Oh, here we go.
But don't say things when you're emotional. Just don't. That's good life advice too, by the way. Give it a minute. Let it breathe for about 5 minutes. You know, type up the email. Don't hit send.
Mm-hmm.
You know, type up the tweet. Don't hit send, or just never tweet. I mean, these are good options. But like calling it personal, because it's just going to give the opportunity for people, and maybe a deserved opportunity, to question whether any lessons have really been learned. And honestly, to me, like the idea that it's personal, and again, it might just be, that's just who I used to play. That's all I meant. That's fine. People say things, but it really was a silly thing to say.
Yeah.
And why give the Chiefs, and I think it puts kind of Mahomes and a lot of those guys, because, I mean, they view him as their friend.
Yes.
But don't think that just because he's their friend, he's not, like, don't think just because, you know, he's immune from bulletin board material. Like, oh, it's personal? Dude, you made decisions that, like, you abandoned us. Maybe 2018 would have ended differently had you not been an idiot beforehand. Like,
yeah.
I can very easily see that, you know what I mean?
Or, and again, like, I've always, I mean, man, this is bringing up a lot of stuff from 2018, especially towards the end, but, you know, there was obviously players only meeting. There was meetings of management to multiple degrees. I mean, there was a situation where, you know, if he had just told them what had happened, or if a friend had told him, which again, read into that what you may, if a friend had told him what he had done, and then he had told the team because of the implications of what had occurred that night, maybe the Chiefs win the Super Bowl in 2018. I mean, it's just, it's wild. Obviously, Clark Hunt, Andy Reid, Brett Veach at the time, they're not incapable of having somebody try to better themselves while also being a professional football player. Like, they've given that opportunity several times, but there were some players that were really upset by a video dictating the season. And then there were other players, mostly older, having to explain, you can't have this. And, you know, it'll be an interesting sight on Sunday, particularly in the pregame, because guys warm up and you can usually chit chat beforehand. It'll be interesting to know that, like, Kareem Hunt was truly beloved, I think, and then it all changed, and he lied, and we as humans do that. It happens, and there are consequences. And
yep.
the Chiefs learned that in a way that most NFL teams do not have to go through while they're on the course of, like, one, getting the number one seed in the AFC, two, trying to make it to the Super Bowl, and three, trying to change the overall framework of the franchise because the team had not been to the Super Bowl since the calendar year of 1970.
The one other thing that I feel like is at least in some somewhat inexorably linked here, specific to the Chiefs, is the whole Tyreek Hill storyline.
Yes.
Right. And from this point looking backwards, I cannot stress enough how different the entire story looks from this point looking backwards, as opposed to at each moment you could have cut in at that time. Like, it just so much ended up coming with the full audio that came out from the whole incident at the airport, whatever, a year and change ago now?
Two summers ago. I don't know. Yes.
It's unbelievable how long ago that felt like a million years ago and yesterday. But so you know, so much ends up changing as you look back from that point. But one thing that the Chiefs always maintained was that that Tyreek Hill's story constantly checked out with them, which makes more sense a little bit, again, kind of from this point looking backwards. But the idea that the Chiefs have ever had, you know, too quick a trigger finger to say, you know, this is a red flag that's going to keep us from bringing this player in, or that we're going to make this decision really quickly or whatever. That's a very weird thing to assign to the Chiefs, that they gave up on Kareem Hunt whenever it is. And this is not me saying this is coming from some grand virtuous place. It would have benefited them more to keep Kareem Hunt on the team, like Nate just mentioned. And it's generally in most teams' on-field best interests to keep players that you know, do problematic things whenever they're a member of your team. The Chiefs have been none too quick to steer clear of guys because something is concerning around that story. So yep. That's always been one of the things that makes the idea that this is seeking to topple the team that gave up on him really stands out as being particularly silly against the Chiefs of all teams, because they've been willing to kind of undertake some stuff in terms of who they're willing to leave on the roster. I don't know. I just thought that was, it makes it seem even more sort of out of place to me.
And
not necessarily saying that's a virtuous good thing, but just that is the setup.
Right. And let's not forget too, the Chiefs organization, led again by Clark Hunt, the owner, was very clear in saying that they wanted Kareem Hunt to have another opportunity. It just couldn't be with them. So that needs to be sort of mentioned as well. Like, it wasn't like the Chiefs wanted to banish Kareem Hunt from the NFL. It's just he needs to obviously get the help he needs. Obviously, people can get better with age and wisdom, but
he's also not the victim of like any element of the story.
No,
the other thing where it's like he's gonna go get his revenge because he was victimized when that's not
the case. Yeah.
What happened at all.
And so and so again, look, the Chiefs, I can tell you, are happy that Kareem Hunt is a successful player for the Browns who has not made any, you know, sizable mistakes since. But, you know, they made the decision that he just couldn't. He couldn't be here any longer here in Kansas City. He couldn't be in Kansas City any longer, or they couldn't associate with him. And they hoped that such a decision would benefit him in the long run. That appears to be the case as of now. The long run is still pretty long, as in all of our lives. But yeah, I mean, you know, people make mistakes. You hope to get better of it. But to categorize him as a victim when he may, you know, you brought me back, Josh. You brought me back to a lot of things in 2018. But yeah, I mean, it'll be fascinating to see him back in Arrowhead. Because yeah, he's a wildly talented football player. And the team knows that. And so they're hoping that he is successful beyond Sunday.
I hope somebody looked at their phone at like the 58-minute mark and then heard us say, let's talk about Kareem Hunt in about 2 minutes and look back down at their phone again.
Yeah, I did.
Danielle. That's on me. I have 30 seconds to add to that.
Okay.
Literally 30 seconds. Even less. If there's one team that you just shouldn't have said anything, I don't know why on earth you would say anything when it's the Chiefs, especially if a lot of them are your friends on the team. Just let it go, you know, just let it slide. Don't provide learn from Juju, everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Don't provide anything that could be possibly construed as bulletin board material and give them an excuse to say, oh, well, Kareem, we love you, but okay, buddy, don't give them that opportunity. Make them like you a little, like, oh, we don't want to tackle him. He's a nice guy. Not that that's how it works, but it's just such a silly thing. I don't know why anyone would ever mention the Chiefs.
That's why Mike DeVito was a Hall of Famer, just because nobody wanted to block him. Like, he's just such a good dude. That's a deep cut. That's a deep cut, and the only way I could think of to transition from that to some laughter at the end of the podcast, so my job is pretty much done. You can check out all sorts of Chiefs-Browns previewing up on The Athletic from Nate and Seth this week. You can also check out Seth's upcoming work in the Chief of the North newsletter. And you can follow all of us on Twitter. Nate's at by Nate Taylor. Seth is at Real MN Chiefs Fan. I'm at JB Briscoe. We will, of course, have another episode probably Thursday, I would have to think, fully previewing this matchup and what we hear from both teams in the week leading up and all the action as the Chiefs, seriously, just have to beat the Browns to go to the AFC Championship game. Not that that game's going to be a pushover or whatever. I'm not trying to give anybody any bulletin
Juju
material. But it's just kind of funny to say out loud, like Kansas City, Cleveland, winner goes to the AFC Championship game. It just hasn't happened before, so I guess that would explain why it sounds weird. All right, that's the podcast. Somebody say something funny so we can be done.
All I'm saying is, does Kevin Stefanski really need to just get healthy? Stay where you are. We got this.
No longer my coach of the year, by the way. He's a fraud.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.